I'm just curious, would everyone who has ever, even once, even if it was only fleetingly, wondered whether your memory was failing, raise your hand if that's true. See, Barb, nothing to worry about. All right. I didn't prepare anything fancy. I just took our normal writing group activities amount to you get three prompts and one chance to get it right. And then forever after, you try to make something out of it. So these are just ordinary writing prompt writings that I did a little revising on. First one is three little words. Speaking of words, it is my considered opinion that we don't use enough of them. The problems that this little fault creates is that we may then be unable to communicate with precision, and as a result, lives may be upset, destroyed, and even sometimes terminated unnecessarily. In part, the problem may be blamed on assuming that what we say or hear means exactly the same thing to both messenger and messaged. Was it Winston Churchill who is alleged to have remarked that Englishmen and Americans are two peoples divided by a common language? Regardless of who said those words, the sentiment is not unique to English speakers. I was once told by a Norwegian that once while visiting Germany, he was latched onto by a German man, as if by a long-lost brother, who proceeded to verbally deluge the hapless Norwegian. The words the Norwegian man said were familiar, but as used by the German, made no sense to the Norwegian. I didn't, he said, understand a thing. One need not go to international to find problems with communication. Problems may exist in any population of any size or location, right down to any two individuals attempting a common understanding. As an example, let us consider those supposedly magical three little words, I love you. Everybody can understand exactly what is being communicated here, right? In this instance, the speaker is packaging a plethora of concepts into what seems to be an economical, succinct statement. If we ask the speaker, however, to parse that statement, he or she might use some or all of the following clarifications. I respect you as a person. I find you to be physically and aesthetically appealing and sexually arousing. We enjoy each other's company, and I always want to have yours for me. But wait, possibly the speaker's feelings are not amorous. In that case, perhaps a better set of clarifying declarations would look like, you are my very best friend, and my life would be immeasurably diminished without you. You always listen to me and give me a different viewpoint if you think I need one. You cut me no slack for my ego and keep me real, even if you are the only one who speaks hard truth to me. I know you have my back and I have yours. A third possibility, same three little words, but from parent to child. You mean more to me than life, and I will defend yours to the end of mine. I want you to have fun, but make responsible decisions and stay safe. I want you to have all the freedom you can handle, but also know that when you are frightened or unsure in any situation, you can talk to me, and if I can't give you a good answer or sound advice, we'll find someone who can. So, I love you. What does that mean? We rely on facial expression, body language, context, and whatever understanding we have of the relationship of speaker to listener up to the time of declaration to determine what we judge to be a plausible answer to the question. Is an accurate conclusion possible? Probably in the vast majority of situations in which those words are spoken. But wouldn't a little elaboration be welcome if one's lips were not otherwise engaged? Suppose the speaker is a sociopathic predator. Such individuals are amoral and without conscience. They act only with regard to their own wishes and are often capable of complex and sophisticated schemes. They may be clever enough to study normal, a word used advisedly, people, and to learn what words fit with what circumstances and what supporting expressions of body language, etc., are used to convey sincerity and deep feelings, usually associated with those three little words. If the intended target of such attentions accepts the words at face value, as they might normally be understood, developments might well end in catastrophe. Perhaps a good many more words are necessary for the listener to feel confident that the true meaning of what has been spoken is well understood. In any event of even the slightest doubt, to dispel any ambiguity, it may be well to resort to another common phrase of three little words. Tell me more. All right, that's That's that one. This is three short ones. For some reason, I like these. I don't know why. I'm still working on that. This is just H2O. The basis of all life as we know it. It floats us if we have the correct body composition. It drowns us if we don't. It makes transportation of ourselves and cargo easier. The sound of it in motion over submerged or emergent obstacles to its progress is soothing to the human ear, calming to human emotion and moods when we're warm, dry, and safe on the bank of stream, lake, or sea. It can be soft, cleansing, soothing, or it can fall on us as cold rain, sleet, hail, or snow. It can bury us in suffocating avalanches. It can dissolve nearly everything, dirt, processed food, and given time, even rocks hard as granite. It aids in cooking and captures vital nutrients from what we cook it in, or what we cook in it, making soups and stews more tasty and nutritious. It provides us with adventure, fear, romance, transport, exercise, fun, and primordial memories, and in the North Country, better access to fish in winter. And challenge, swim a mile, swim the English Channel, cross a glacier or climb one on a mountainside, grin into the teeth of a winter gale, paddle through skim ice on a late November day, and know that you will overcome all the obstacles and little tricks that Ma Nature can throw your way. In this manner, water makes sure that we know we're alive and challenges us to stay that way. Water is all things to all people and all life on earth, vital, necessary, sustaining, condemning, challenging, friend, foe, indifferent, helpful, or creator of obstacles. It is an integral part of all human experience in whatever quantity it exists at any time or place. Last one, clowning around, Oops. I am at the end of my rope. Can't take it anymore. I'm tired of hiding the truth and I've got to live as myself, not who people think I am or who they want me to be. I know what that will mean. People will be suspicious of me just because of who I really am. They won't care about all the good that I do or the aspects of my personality that might indicate that I'm actually kind, generous, non-judgmental, have a lively curiosity, love to read and travel. No, all they'll remember about me is the fear I inspire in little children, how my appearance causes kids to have nightmares. No one will take me seriously either. They won't for a minute be able to imagine me as a serious student of all human history or any other intellectual pursuit. I get stereotyped all the time. Sometimes they imagine me to be jolly and amusing. Is anyone jolly all the time? People don't stop to think that maybe that's just a front necessary for my job. As with anyone, I have my moods too, and right now I'm pretty depressed. They refuse to grant that I'm entitled to my dark moods just as they have theirs. Am I not human as well as they? Sometimes it seems that they only want to deny me my basic humanity, considering me some kind of subhuman monster or conversely a walking, talking joke. Well, I don't want to be a joke anymore. I can't help it if I frighten some people or arouse their fears or loathing or even their hatred. Even if I risk death, I have to come out. Consequences be damned. If that means I basically have to start life all over again in a new place, so be it. No one ever said it would be easy to live a life as a circus clown.